Oh, hey there, folks, and welcome back to another episode of Love Handles, a boozy romp through the musical dramas of George Frideric Handel. This week we get to chat about one of the most performed Handel operas, Giulio Cesare in Egitto. I get the chance to sit down with one of my favorite humans on this planet and former housemate, Zita Culpepper. Zita is an amazing soprano with a great voice on and off the stage. You can even check out her feature on goodblacknews.org as she explains how white colleagues, friends, and family can be true allies. Now, I do want to give a trigger warning for this episode because we do briefly discuss the sexual assault that does happen in this opera about a third of the way through the episode. Enjoy this chat with Zita Culpepper.
And in my little chair that I got at Ross, a little blue chair.
Ross dress for less?
Yes, because I'm cheap.
Don't I know it? Zita Mellon, is that how you're going professionally currently? You go by?
No, Zita Culpepper.
We're going Zita Culpepper?
Yes, Mellon is only for the family. And the GMC teaching job I have, because it's just easier.
Okay, so I would describe you as a soprano, a performer. We have an educator now.
Yes.
A tenacious woman.
Okay.
An I would say activist.
Yes, blacktivist.
She said blacktivist. Would you say that those words, and a former housemate?
Oh, yeah. Would you say Edgewood House.
Right. Never forget good old College Park, Maryland. Oofed. Oofed, oofed. Yeah. But yeah, would you say that those are accurate depictions of who you are?
I would say so, absolutely. I very much agree with those.
Also, there is no one that I know that will get me so close to peeing myself from laughing so hard.
Yay! Humor award.
Humor award.
I hold that proudly.
Right? Yeah, that's how I would describe you to people. I'm just like, this is a funny blacktivist.
Yes. Who can occasionally scream on an operatic stage.
Yes, absolutely. Listen, as someone that witnessed your Susanna firsthand, it was an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Yes, of course. So we are here today to talk about an opera known as Giulio Cesare in Egitto. Full title. Yes. We're going full title.
Yes.
good old Julius Caesar.
Yeah.
Handel really did this one. This opera fucks hard.
You know, I think what's really cool about it is that I think anyone who feels like, oh, I know the story of Cleopatra and, you know, Julius Caesar, like, I totally know what's going to happen. And then you step into the opera and you're like, this is not at all what I was expecting.
This is an interesting account of what had happened.
Yeah, and I think it's good because it, like, leaves the audience on their toes, right?
Yeah, totally.
The first moment that you experience something that's not at all how you remember the historic tale, then you're like, well, what's next, right?
Right. Okay,
what are they going to change?
I'm gonna back up 2 seconds here. Can you give me your, what is your relationship with Handel?
Okay. So, I would say, especially in comparison to you, I'm definitely more novice in terms of my experience with Handel.
Listen.
I wish people could just see it.
I did a little double take. My experiences are limited, but exciting.
Well, I think for me, in undergrad, I did a lot of I started on the path of like, my teacher was like, oh, let's learn Cleopatra. Cause I started off as a mezzo. And I think one of the things I noticed about my teachers in undergrad is they were very like, Mozart, 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 Purcell, Purcell, Purcell. So in terms of Baroque literature, it was really Purcell.
Right.
And it wasn't until like later in my undergrad and then into grad school that they were like, let's learn all of these Cleopatra arias. And I kind of actually taken like a step back from Cleopatra. One, because I feel like there's a point I want to be vocally where I'm like, yes, today is the day where I'm actually going to conquer this role. You know, like to me, there's a sultriness. I don't want to say heft, but there's like a sultriness and like a thickness. Mm-hmm. To the type of voices that I think really make Cleopatra the most phenomenal role she can be.
Absolutely, yeah. I think, so in the last episode that I did with my friend Gina Hanslick, we discussed Agrippina and how Poppaea, how Handel with Agrippina started this like creating these sex kitten roles for Soprano.
Yes.
And I think... Cleopatra falls into that sex kitten.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So hard. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think her first, people are always like, you know, oh, I feel like most people focus on Cleopatra being like, oh my gosh, she like thought she lost Cesare and she's like so upset, and like so much of her character for so many people revolves around Cesare, but she's like her own independent entity, and I think people often forget that, right? That
I think she's the most interesting character in the whole. I personally was like, why is this not called fucking Cleopatra in Egypt?
Like her arc throughout her arias is something that I think is completely underrated, because people just focus on like Varoro and Piangero, and then sometimes Da Tempeste, but like there's so much more to her character that doesn't revolve around feeling as though she's lost Cesare, and then him actually being alive and her is like, oh my gosh, my world is right again.
For people that may not be as familiar with the version of the story that we're talking about, do you think you can give us broad strokes, three sentences to describe the plot?
Yeah, so.
I'm gonna be counting too, so.
I kind of think of it as this reality TV show where two siblings are rivaling for a throne, and this one man's just living his best life, trying to be the best person he can be, and he's stuck in an entanglement between love and also being a good ruler. I don't know. I can't think three sentences.
I'm into that. That's a great, I think that's a great, because that power dynamic between the siblings, Cleopatra and
Ptolemy, is really interesting. And I think it
super
plays heavily. Yeah, I think it plays very heavily on where they both end up.
Yes. Okay. I want to get into, just because, okay, there are so many bangers in this opera.
Yeah.
Like, okay, get ready for this. I pulled up some fun facts about this opera because I am like that. Okay. I already covered, I have a note in here that says, why isn't it called Cleopatra? that is,
because
that's
it
my...
was the Baroque period and right. People loved, well, you know, also like countertenors were the thing, or castrati were the thing. So most operas are not even going to feature, the soprano wasn't really the highlight of singers during that time. So
Exactly.
I understand why.
And I mean, he wrote the whole thing specifically for, I mean, his favorite castrato, Senesino.
Exactly.
His favorite soprano, arguably his favorite soprano, Francesca Cuzzoni.
Absolutely.
When you look at the roles, it's insane. 8 arias for the two of them each.
Yes.
I was like, excuse me? I'm sorry. No. That is too many arias.
Yeah.
But
one thing
I mean,
that's
like,
really interesting is like, even with Handel's operas, like so much of any... the only interactions you get with multiple characters is in the recit. Rarely ever are there prominent duets, trios, ensemble numbers with the characters. I find it so lonely.
Yeah, that's a super hard thing to navigate as a performer singing Handel. I personally, from personal experience, has been like, how do I include everyone else that is on stage, that could be on stage with me? I mean, because we think so much of Baroque arias as a snapshot of that emotion, and then the recitative or the speaking parts between the pieces are going to be where all the action lies. So in order to you know, a lot of times directors will ask that everyone leave the stage and let you have your moment with this aria, this like snapshot of feelings. But I'm like, I don't want to just I don't want to. I'm sorry. I don't want to pick a verb for A, B, and A prime sections.
Yes.
No, no, no. Baby, I gotta...
We only like to sing in the shower so much.
Right, exactly.
Only so much.
Let me have fun with other people on stage, please, even if they're not singing. Like, they can take
Absolutely.
A break. They can sit on their throne, be whatever they are, but, like, give me something to interact with.
Yeah.
Okay, what I was going to say in the first place, tangents will happen forever. just, like, get into it. So these arias were so popular when he wrote them that they were actually, in 1724, they were published in these little, like, songbooks for people to, like, carry around with them. Because, I mean, like, no TV, like, no Netflix. Yeah, what are we going to do? I guess we're going to sing through some fucking Handel arias.
DiCapo arias.
Seriously. And so it was published in this little book called A Pocket Companion for Gentlemen and Ladies. And then
that
was so popular that, like, two other publishing companies came out with these little pocket books that had at least 8 of the arias from Cesare in them.
Really? I didn't even know that. That's really cute, though.
Right? So people just like hang out in their parlors and just like whip out fucking any of the arias. Cause like,
yeah, they're like, I'm bored. What do you want to do? Oh my gosh, I've totally brought my like pocket book of like Handel arias. Let's jam.
Right? I was like, this is wild. This is truly wild. Yeah. Okay, wait. Can we talk about the production that you watched?
Yes, so I watched a Teatro Colón production with Amanda Majeski, Franco Farioli, who else? Some other,
Jake Arditi, actually. I think, is also in that one.
Yes, and what was really cool about it for me is that all of the roles were sung by countertenors. You know, so often you see a mix of like, oh, let's have some mezzo sopranos, let's have some countertenors, but it was all countertenors, and then Cornelia was, of course, mezzo, and then, I thought that was really cool. It was interesting almost to have it in the exact way it would potentially be performed during Handel's time.
Right, with us not having castrati at the
moment. Yeah, like, it was nice to hear the vocal timbres and qualities that you would potentially get if we could travel back to 1724.
Right, because I mean, like, we had that whole movement of baritones singing Cesare and Tolomeo.
Yep.
It was an interesting, so I looked into that earlier today because I was curious about why that happened. And it was actually in like the 20th century revivals of Handel operas that happened in Germany, where everything was in German. Yes. And they were like, we don't like the idea. Like, countertenors were just coming back into fashion with, like, Alfred Deller in the early 1900s. So in 1922 was the first time this was, like, really revived in recent history. So the whole thing was in German. All the castrato roles were now baritones, and the score was, like, gutted.
Ugh.
Like, they went through the score and took out the orchestra. Yeah.
It's so good, though.
Yeah, I know. And I'm happy that, like, we kind of got back into what's happening. I mean, back to this, like, hip, H-I-P-P.
Absolutely.
Historically informed performance practice.
And I get offering up some change. I understand. Let's take a chance. Let's take a risk. Let's do something different. I get that. But I think with some things, it can completely change your experience, right? So, for example, this is a completely different opera, but Among the Night Visitors, when the king is played by, one of the kings is played by a mezzo, it completely changes what you're experiencing. It completely changes how the harmony sound. It completely changes, like, the overall timbre and quality of the music. Doesn't necessarily make it bad or good, but it does change your experience.
Absolutely. So, like, when you have those, like, you have that duet at the end with Cleopatra and Cesare, and you're like, ooh, there's supposed to be some voice crossing here that you're not getting.
It's so much tighter with the countertenor and soprano singing it. Like, it's right. Like, and I think if you consider it, like, if they are in love, not only are they intertwining with one another, but their voices are intertwining with one another. Like, it really shows their romantic relationship, and you lose that musically. You lose some,
like, intimacy, maybe?
You lose intimacy when you change the voice type that sings it. Doesn't, like I said, doesn't make it a good thing or a bad thing. It's a...
I'm absolutely no. Listen, I'm no, no, you're fine. I mean, listen, I've been working with Barn Opera and their social distance opera initiative, and I'm singing Leporello right now, as a countertenor. And so the harmonies that are, like, Leporello sings so many of the bass, like all the bass notes. I sing a lot,
absolutely,
sing a lot of, like, 5-1, 5-1, 5-1. But it's, like, so different.
For you.
Oh, listen, alto twos, baby. We will also sing 5-1s. But it's just, it's interesting to hear it back in relation to, like, all, like, the big choruses where I'm like, oh, yeah, you are now missing some. I mean, thank God Masato gets to sing also
absolutely
like, bass lines, because without that, it would be kind of odd to be missing the, like,
that foundation.
Structural, yeah, the structural. Yes. I don't know what I'm trying to say with that, but you know what I mean. Yeah, foundation.
I get you. We are on the same page, baby.
Yes, listen, it's me trying to be as clear and concise as I can be for people that are not with me. But yeah, okay, so yeah, that was just my finding out of why baritones, because the production I watched was the Bloomington Opera,
Okay.
where they did use a baritone for Cesare.
I was thinking about watching that one, and then I was like, let me just try something different. I know, like I told you over text, I was right. Like, I'm going to find the weirdest.
Right. Because that one, the Bloomington Opera production that I watched, is very historically accurate.
Yeah, straightforward.
Yeah, and it is very much set in Egypt. And Safe. It is very much a white man as Cesare. It's very much, I mean, it's a lovely young Asian woman playing Cleopatra, who
I mean, Amanda Majeski is definitely not the the most ethnically appearing soprano in the history of soprano.
Cleopatra, okay.
Yeah, well, this version was like, it was like weird Jersey Shore-esque kind of
yes.
feel in Egypt. I was like, what's going on here? And then there were afros in the third act, and I was like, oh no,
right,
I'm concerned.
Afros on non-melanated
white
skin,
yeah, yes.
Some
white,
some
women, white passing
non-melanated,
yes,
women,
it was a choice.
I said, whoa,
ooh, what are you doing here? Oh, no,
right, that I want to know what year that production was in. I have it up right now, sorry, I just want to check.
No.
I think it was like 2017. Call
the Bloomington or the one that I watched,
the one that you watched, yeah, 2017, I think so,
yeah,
anyway. That was not that long ago.
Which is like, yikes, but also like foreign concepts of productions.
Listen, people
doesn't excuse it, but
people try to do whatever they want with Handel just because like you can.
Yeah.
Like it has no, like, no, who's to say like you can't do this, I guess. I mean, you can just, I mean, you throw Bohème on the moon, whatever you want.
Yeah, or Musetta in a gorilla suit. Like, we're just going to do anything.
Right. We're just going to throw anything up there. Yep. So, yeah. What did you... So, you saw that production. Great.
Yes.
Got some plot down. What was... Did you have any arias that were, like, real bangers? Or, like, any pussy poppers? Any...
you know... Lempio was probably my favorite.
Okay.
I feel like Ptolemaire's
character... Can you give us some context about what happened?
Yeah, so Lempio is an aria that Ptolemaio, which is Cleopatra's brother, sings in the first act. And essentially what he's saying is, how dare... Like, Cesare is trying to challenge my throne.
Right.
And I'm not going to let him steal my joy. So I'm going to plot to kill him, because you're not going to take the very things that I love. You're not going to take away my desires. You're not going to take away my throne. So that's really, he just pumps himself up for killing mm-hmm. Cesare in that aria. And to me, it is the ultimate bop. That honestly is my favorite one out of the entire opera.
I will put a clip of it right here. Lit. There it is. That'll be a little post-production James thing to do.
Sounds good.
Yes, that is my favorite aria. It's also my, like, new handle to bring to auditions.
Oh my gosh, that's great. I think it's just so, like, vocally it's so good, and I think vocally what's cool. happening, it completely leaves so much opportunity acting-wise and dramatically.
Mm-hmm. And it's agitated, and it gives you... It's his first aria. You get to see what a little shit he is.
Yes.
This is, like, the moment for everyone to be like, Tolomeo, this is who you are. You're being a fucking little shit, and I...
Yes.
You're going to be this way for this whole opera. That's going to be great.
Yeah, it really sets the tone. I think it's important to really... Like, the particular production I watched... He was, like, on a treadmill and, like, punching at things. He was, like, running on... Well, no, it wasn't a treadmill. It was one of those, like, bicycle johns. Mm-hmm. He was just, like, running on it. And then he was standing on it at the end, like, when he was finishing his A prime. And I was like, well, let's just, like, not... Let's not do the most and set the bar.
Like, right. Because now we all have to do that now. And I'm like, I can barely stand.
Like, he was balancing on the handlebars and on the seat, singing, wonderful cadenza to completely end
right.
the aria. And I was like, wow, okay, we are doing things.
Yes. And I said, this is how we're going to start this character off. And then he just gets worse from there. I'm not going to spoil what happens, but it gets kind of gnarly. Trigger warning for anyone seeing Cesare for sexual assault.
Yes. Rape.
Oh, well, we did just kind of ruin it, but that's fine. I feel like a trigger warning is probably necessary. Okay,
yeah.
So here's the thing. I did some refreshing in my brain today about, like, an aria I wanted to talk about. And I was like, oh, I can talk about this one. I, like, was, like, listening to it on my walk to the liquor store for this specifically.
Nice.
Right. And I said, oh, this is a great aria. I got so many that I love. But in the back of my head, I was like, you know what's the best aria? Da okay. Tempeste.
Yes! It is my favorite Cleopatra aria.
Da Tempeste is vocalizes up the ass.
Yes.
It is a lot. I will put a clip of it right here. Lit. So would you like to follow this rabbit hole of nonsense that I went through literally about an hour and a half ago?
Yes, I do. I love rabbit holes of nonsense.
That's great. So in terms of it's a Cleopatra aria. I probably should have explained that better.
I said that.
Oh, okay, great.
You good.
All right. So mm-hmm. it's her last aria where she's like, everything's fine. We conquered all this nonsense that my brother put us through. But they are both similar markings. I have my Baron writer right here.
Okay.
Only because I really needed to look at the markings in it, because I was like, what would happen? I was like, they're essentially the same tempo, Lempio and Da Tempeste.
Yes.
Because you get this da 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 da, and you get Dum
Yes.
dum 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 dum.
Yeah.
Okay, showing relationships, brother and sister. It's his first aria, her last aria. And then
Yes.
you get into like their little, they have these little staccato moments where he goes da 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 da, and then she goes what is her weird little motif
Da
in
da da
there?
da 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 da.
Yeah.
Oh wait, she goes. Da
Da da
da
da da.
da 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 da. Yes.
Yes. I was like those are too similar for me to feel like there's not a correlation there, even though I'm sure there really isn't. But like in my brain, I'm
No,
like,
I mean
I
there
thought I
might
was
be.
brilliant. I thought I was it. Earlier today, I was like, I cracked the code.
Well, I
It
was thinking about that. I think that's absolutely completely possible because one of the things that I was observing when I was listening to it is after Lempio, when there's like there was this like orchestral interlude when Cleopatra is disguised to seduce Cesare, and there's a little bit of Lempio like musically in that orchestral interlude before she starts singing her next aria. So I think it's absolutely possible that Handel intentionally made this comparison between the two siblings.
make it a little what's that word I want? Cyclicker? Nope, that's not it. Baby, I've had half a bottle of wine and I'm drinking a beer.
Was like, you said rosé. Where's the rosé? I was like,
I'm
oh no,
sorry,
it's gone.
I'm drinking an IPA now.
Oh,
I
nice.
know. Yeah, so that was my brilliant moment. I'm glad you brought up Lempio because I was like, listen, I was gonna bring up both of those pieces because I sure do love Da Tempesta. And the recording I probably put in this is going to be one where you hear the intro and you think she's not gonna make it. Cause
That tempo.
I'm gonna assume that I'm gonna put the Louise Alder recording of it in there from the BBC Proms, or is that
Yeah.
where it's from? Anyway, it's Louise Alder, and you sit there and you think, oh, this is the tempo you picked?
Yes.
Toy, toy, toy.
Yeah, the best of luck.
Best of luck to
Do you, baby?
you. Yes.
I will see you at the end.
Oh my gosh, too real, too real, too real. All right. Also, speaking of Cleopatra, did you know that it was Beverly Sills? Like that was Beverly Sills' big break?
Really?
Yeah. So,
Huh.
New York City Opera, I think, was the one that had her do it, and then that was like her, like that's what shot her into
Put her on
like.
the map, yeah.
Yeah. I was like,
Wow, good for
didn't
her.
realize that. That was also in my fun facts.
I mean, that role is just a tank. That's
It's
just,
eight arias
it's a
in a
burden.
duet. A burden. She said a burden.
Well, the tough thing with Da Tempesta is that it is the most, I think it's the most vocally challenging one because of its agility, and you consider that it's towards the end
And you
of.
just sang seven other arias.
Yes, I think it's
Listen, I'm
very.
sorry. I am
Pacing
someone
is
that is,
important.
I'm here for cuts. I know there are so many purists out there, but I'm just like, I'm sorry. I can't do a 6-hour Handel. I know that this
Yeah.
whole podcast was built around the idea of loving Handel, and I do love him. But boy, oh boy, that's too many arias. You
Well,
gotta
and you
give
have to
me.
remember, even during that time, people weren't completely paying attention to what was on stage. The whole reason why it was so long was opera houses were, yes, it was a place to witness entertainment, but it was also a place to socialize. And
Right.
so most public opera houses during that time, it was really just a space to get together with your friends and the music. It's like going to a really fancy restaurant and having this jazz band playing. You're not giving your undivided attention to the jazz band, right? You might
Right.
tune in every once in a while, but largely it just serves as background noise to your socializing. So you have to really consider
Yeah, and they like, what else are they doing?
that.
They're not sitting here watching Too Hot to. Nope, was that Too Hot to Handle? Too Hot to Handle!
Yes.
Oh my gosh, what a good show. Sorry.
Oh, you are a mess.
Listen, they're not trying to sit out here trying to watch Below Deck. I gotta tune into my
Yes.
stories.
Yeah. And I think that's why the story is so like you have this overarching plot, right? With any opera, you have this overarching plot, but there are all of these little subplots. So when you do occasionally tune in, you might catch a little glimpse of a little subplot that gets that happens and gets resolved right when you decide to pay attention. Like, with all that happens to Cornelia, right? Her whole entire existence.
My favorite.
Her whole thing is subplots, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for her, definitely, it's her overarching plot, but she serves as a series of subplots throughout
She is definitely a B story.
Same with Sesto. It's really sad because they just kind of wallow in the same emotion, and it really isn't until the end that they finally get this contrast in their characters, which sucks. I think they're too neglected. Like, Cornelia deserved way more diverse and varied arias than what she actually received. Same, I mean, even Sesto got like a little bit of like variations in his arias, but I think overall, like, they deserve much more of a character arc, not just at the end of Act 3.
She's just like, she starts off sad. I mean, because the whole plot starts because her husband was killed. And so she just kind of starts sad, stays sad. And Sesto is angry and stays angry until the end.
Yep.
Boop, boop. And that's what they were given. So, you know.
And they deserved more.
They really did. So if you forget the historical context, if you could set this opera in any other way, how would you want to set it? Ooh. Or what would you want to see?
What would I want to see? Maybe this is just me being a little bit biased, but I think it'd be interesting to set it down south.
Ooh.
I think it would be interesting to have it be like, let's say, like, post civil rights movement, even say like maybe a little bit amidst that, a little bit after. And I think it'd be interesting to have like there be interracial aspects to it in that sense, in a southern sense, right? You have situations where you can have like two siblings who have parents who are like, you know, we want you to defy all the odds, right? We want you to be exceptional Black Americans despite all the barriers that are put in front of you, right? And so they've grown up with this mentality that they have to have the best. But with this mentality of having to have the best, they also are competing against each other, not to mention the fact that the brother has more privileges allotted to him than the sister.
Right.
And then you have, you know, maybe Cesare grew up believing that, I don't know. This would be a very charged opera.
I
think it would help, like, bring about discussion, which I think would be really interesting. But to have Cesare be this individual who's always believed that, oh, I'm going to marry a white woman, and, you know, I've grown up in this one place, and I have these really one-channel views, and to meet Cesare, and that completely disrupts all that he's known. And it challenges the very beliefs and foundation of his existence. I think that would be a very interesting version.
I would be very here for that.
Yeah. And like maybe like Ptolemaio, I don't know, like maybe it's Popeo's, like, I don't know, murdered. Like, it's a race related thing. I don't know. I think it'd be very interesting to do that. I think it would be
You're playing with power dynamics. You know, you're dealing with two groups of people from very different worlds.
Absolutely.
And I think that would, it'd be very interesting.
Just like drop a little chaos.
Right. We were, back when we were doing this, when I was covering Ptolemaio last year, we had a chat about, in my brain, I had everyone, I was like removing everything from historical context and making all of the characters humans from history that did the things, or that like related to the things that these characters did.
Oh,
so
wow.
So you have Cesare as, if you think of Julius Caesar as like a colonizer, you have Christopher Columbus.
Ooh.
Right.
Yeah.
Or and then you have someone like Aquila, who is like the general. You have him being so ruthless and like wanting so much. You make him like Attila the Hun.
Yeah, I like this.
Isn't that fun? I mean,
Yes, I like this a
I
lot.
kind of wanted to keep Cleopatra as Cleopatra just because, you know. But I also really wanted you can do anything you want with this. Anyway, I was thinking just like full black box theater with just like these characters, these like very like staunch characters from history.
It'd be
Or
cool to have it like a round theater where it's
yeah, I think I
like
had
almost
Ptolemaio.
completely circular.
Yes, I think I had Ptolemaio was Blackbeard.
Ooh.
Because
What about
why not?
Sesto?
Sesto, I had so Sesto is a pants roll, which for
Yes.
people who don't know what a pants roll is when you give a young male character to a female identifying voice part.
Yes.
And it was written that way in when he originally wrote it. It was not, I don't think it was written for a castrato. I think it was written specifically for
No, it was
a
for in
mezzo.
travesti. Yes.
I made Sesto Joan of Arc
Oh, wow. I like that. I
because
think you should make this happen.
I like Sesto as Joan of Arc. Oh, and
Yeah.
sorry, one more. Cornelia, she was Jackie Kennedy.
Oh, I like that.
I was like, listen, these are all things that like happen to big people in history.
I think that would be a very interesting production, though. I
Listen,
think you should make that happen.
find
You
me a
know who should work
budget.
with on that? Diane, because Diane was talking about some.
Diane the
She was talking
Machine.
about some other production she wanted to do with, like, I think it was like Figaro or something like that. And I was like, I'm for this. She had like this really amazing, like, completely like so like queer production for Figaro. I think she we her and I were talking about like Figaro and the Count having some like romantic involvement with one another, and that's why there's so much being challenged for their wedding. And I thought that was so interesting. It's like, yes, let us defy the norms that are set for these operas.
Right. Bringing another person into your relationship does not mean that your relationship is ending.
Yep.
Hello?
Okay.
Okay. Last question for you. What was my last question
Is
for
this like
you?
Final Jeopardy? Do I have to like.
Final Jeopardy. What was going to be my last question for you? Not great, James. I think actually that I think that was my last question for you, to be honest.
Oh,
I
that's
was like,
okay.
oh,
Well,
duh,
so
sorry, this is it's my favorite question. I don't know why I completely forgot to ask you this. That's so stupid of me. This is the question that I've based this whole thing off of. If you could get anyone to sing Handel, who would you want to hear sing Handel? And to give you an idea of the answers we're looking for here, I have always said I want Dolly Parton to be singing all of the Handel queens because I want a relatable, down-home type queen.
This is just like right off the bat, like not giving it serious thinking. Billy Porter.
Wow. Any specific
Because
role that
when
you
I
have
can
in
say,
mind?
you know what? I think one, I mean, Agrippina would be great. Cleopatra would be, oh my gosh, if you really want to see someone who can channel all of the sexiness.
Oh, Billy Porter as
But
Cleopatra.
think about it. Think about it. Think
I
about it.
mean, they wore that whole Egyptian look to the Met Gala.
Yes.
Heavenly Bodies, I think was the that year
Yes.
where
Just
he
think
was
about
where
it.
they were brought in on those shoulders of those men's.
Yes. Them shirtless
We
men.
said thank you, Billy Porter.
Yes. We didn't know we needed this, but we did.
Yes, we didn't
But
know.
he's. Well, Billy, I'm going to say Billy because I want to respect Billy's pronouns, and because I'm unsure, I'm going to say
Same.
Billy. But Billy is a phenomenal performer. If you've ever seen clips of Billy in Kinky Boots, Billy is someone who just completely takes vulnerability with acting to a whole other level. Like yes. an inspirational level of just the willing, even in pose, just the willingness to completely dive themselves into the emotions of the character, the emotions of the piece, where that particular character is in that moment. I really feel honesty and vulnerability every time I see Billy in any sort of like musical, TV, movie, etc. And I think the one thing that I have challenges with Handel is that people get so lost in the vocal demand so often that they lose the dramatic part about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or what can happen with Handel is that the ornamentation that you add in the A prime isn't necessarily an emotional motivator, but rather a technical motivator. How much can I show off in this A prime with some of the ornaments not really helping with what you're like conveying, right? Like
right.
how do these ornaments help motivate and help really display the emotions this character is experiencing? Why are you repeating these words at all?
Right. So which is a very that is a very new concept for ornamentation
yeah.
in terms of like how we use, I think that is something I stand behind that in using ornamentation as something that drives intention.
As well as showing your vocal ability.
Right. Like I think it's this, they like, go, really weird they go hand in, yeah, they go hand Absolutely. In hand now. And I think, I mean, obviously at one point in history, ornamentation, which for anyone who doesn't know is, in Handel arias, when you go through an A section, a B section, and then you go back to the A section, and then you get to add notes and do some flourishes.
Yes.
To at one point that was specifically to show off vocal prowess, but as we are, you know, getting a little tired of that, we it's now like we heard. Listen, these arias are only 3 sentences long. We already know what you said. We
yeah. We're like, here how can you really take it to the next yeah. level?
Right. You have
it's
been
hard.
The, yeah, the B section. You're already transformed. Show us more with yes. the A prime.
Yes.
We
and
said
I think
boo-boo.
Billy Porter is someone who would be able to. I feel like Billy Porter can make every A prime just completely make sense.
Yes.
You
absolutely.
Know?
Storyteller.
Yes.
I love that. Zaida, yeah. Where can people find you?
Well, I am on Instagram at Zaida C. Soprano. And then also on Twitter, Zaida Mellon. You can find me on Facebook under Zaida Culpepper. I also have a Facebook page, Zaida Culpepper Soprano, where you can see any updates, recordings. I'm actually working on a project right now with... It's I'm a part of the Indigus project right now, which is about bringing out and premiering recordings of works by people of color that there are no recordings for. So I'm currently working on a George Bridgetower piece, and so I'm looking forward to releasing that recording soon, which I'll release on the Facebook page for my singing endeavors.
Yes.
Yeah. Add me, follow me. I love to interact with new people. Anybody in the arts, anybody not in the arts. I just like to get to know people. You know me. You know me. I love to get to know people.
I
I'm
do
all
know
about
you.
People. Yes.
She does love to get to know people.
Yes.
Go up and see her sometime.
Yes. Oh, wait. Don't come down south. Don't do that.
All right.
It's treacherous down here.
Great. And as always, you can find me at Countertenor James across all social media. Zaida, thank you so much for being a part of this.
Absolutely. Thank you for asking me. It's yes. always good to see a lovely face.
Of course.